My upbringing is a little bit of an interesting mix in the sense that I grew up, like you said, Monroe Sex Institutions. Hopefully my English is somewhat Americanized, I guess. But my parents are very, very strict, very mocked that I should have a close relationship with my mother's family. So ever since I was a little child, I used to go to my grandfather in Miami, spend my winter vacations there, my summer vacations there. So I was very much influenced by him. He was nifty when I was 11. And at the age of 12, my parents sent me to my great uncle. My great uncle, his yurta is coming up in 2 weeks, actually. Shmuel Leifer, you heard him, Chister Rebbe, at Yeshiva in Bar Park. He was a very, very influential figure in my life. I really grew up in his house to a large extent. Spent every Yantif there, every Shabbos there, every Yantif there, multiple Shabbos in there, every month, twice a month. And really, he raised me. So, as we'll discuss, here I am. I'm this 18-year-old, really, it starts from 13. 13-year-old kid. I'm in MTA, Monroe Sex High School. I'm in Shalvim, a Hezder Yeshiva. I'm in NYU getting my degree in psychology. And
I know what a Hezder Yeshiva is.
It's like a Dati Lumi. They go to the army for 2 years. They go to the army for a year and a half. They go to the yeshiva for 5 years. Like a Dati Lumi, Mizrahi. So here I am, and I'm kind of in between these two things. And there's no one else I could speak to about it because not so many people in YU have that experience, and not so many people in Bar Park have my experience. So here I am caught in the middle of two things, and they both felt extremely true to me. They both resonated for me. It wasn't like one felt like it was MS, one was Sheker, and let me figure out, you know, I know where I have to end up. I was stuck. So what this year is, I would say, is the intellectual journey that I took to end up where I am now. Now, I'm not a finished package. This isn't a finished product. There's a lot more to work on. Everyone's always continuing to work. But a place where, Baruch Hashem, somehow I live in Bar Park and go to YU. So either I'm as Tamish, that was when I started, or somehow we figured out, I don't know, you can decide by the end of it. That's up to you. But where I ended up now, this is the journey of how I got there. And I'll tell you, when I started off, it felt like a tug of war. It felt like I have to choose A or B. There's nothing else. Either I'm going to my family in Bar Park, or I'm going to my intellectual education in Washington Heights. That's it. The Gamre, A or B. And I have to figure out, where do I belong? And hopefully through this journey that we'll take together, it's really my personal journey. If it resonates, great. Like I said, if not, I appreciate your listening to me. It's very self-indulgent, but you know. What can we do? Okay, so let's start. I really want to speak tonight about the topic of Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Kim Chaim. Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Kim Chaim. It's a halachic concept. It's not some abstract idea. The Gemara, we'll see the Gemara's inside. The Gemara says Eilu Ma'isa. That means like this. If you have a machlokas, you have two people. The Gemara says it, Bishamai Bishilo. The epitome of a machlokas. Bishamai says X, Bishilo says Y. Who's right? Who's right? Which one's right? So we all know halachic Ma'isa. How do we paskim machlokas Bishamai Bishilo? Who do we hold like? Altogether, Beis Hillel. We always, there we go. Thank you. Rebbe's sitting on the right. We always pass him like Beis Hillel. But what do we do with Beis Shammai? Is Beis Shammai, if we don't hold Beis Shammai, he's Oskavar, that's it, done. Get rid of Beis Shammai, never talk to him. So this concept, and we'll see the Gemara, says, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Kim Chaim. Both of them, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, side by side, both of them are Divrei Eilu Kim Chaim. They're Lukus, right?
Yeah.
They're both true. So how is it possible? This is the question we're going to start with. This is the beginning of the Sugya. How is it possible to have two things that are true at the same time? Can such a thing exist?
Yes.
If I tell you 2 plus 2 equals 4, and I also tell you 2 plus 2 equals 6, one of them's right, one of them's wrong. So let's go further. Halacha l'maisa. We pass on like Beis Hillel. Right now, Shaul gets up and decides, I'm going to hold like Beis Shammai, why not? I could do both. I'm going to hold like Beis Shammai. What happens? Is it okay? You're overloaded to school, dude. It's a deraisa. So shkoch, very nice. We could say theoretically in some abstract world, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Kim Chaim, we all take out a guitar, Shalom Yisrael, everyone's happy. If you do Beis Shammai, that's it. You're over in Issa D'Oraisa. So what does that mean, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Kim Chaim? It's not true. It's sheker. It's garbage. Not true. No such rule exists, right? Get the problem?
Yeah.
Good. So let's go through the sources level. This is what we're going to be discussing. Source one is just the Gemara. So it's Gemara. I quote the English here. I'm going to read in the Gemara, but you can follow along in English. Ish Kri Reb Evitar Leyo, Omrle, right? Rev Evyasar finds Elio Novi, his Gilu Eyo, and he asks him, Maika Ovi Kosh Baruch Hu, what sugi is the Abishah learning? You know, Tachlis, what's, you see a friend in Yeshiva, you know, what sugi are you learning? Find Elio, what's the Abishah learning? That's what he wants to know. So what does Elio say to him? Omrle, Ka'osik Pilegish Begiva, whole sugi in Tanakh, and we won't go into it now, but says the Gemara, Umaika Omar, so what does the Abishah say? What's the Tzakalacha? No, what? Give me a shtick of Torah. What does the Ebrish say on this sugya? So says the Gemara, Amalei, Avisar, Bini, Kachu Omer, Yozim, Kachu Omer, right? There's Machoks in the Gemara, and the Abishur quotes both opinions. He says, one day, one person says like this, one person says like this. He says both of them. Amalei, Chasu Shalom, Ika Sveka, Kame Shmaya? Wait a minute, what did I just tell you? I said that there's Machoks in the Gemara, there's two Mandamim, two opinions. And the Abishur, when he learns the Sugya, he says both opinions. So what, Kosh Baruch has a suffix? He's not sure who's right? How could it be? It's a problem, no? How can the Kosh Baruch Hu not know what's right? He has a suffix, right? That's the Gemara's question. So what does the Gemara say? Both of them are true. Both of them are true. There's a machlokes to be shown him as to what the parameters of Eilu Ve'ilu Divrei Kim Chayim is. Let's look at source 3. I'll read. We won't read source 3 inside. I'll say it outside. But I think it's fundamental to this topic. Source 3. This is Rashi and Ksuvah. Rashi and Ksuvah describes how does Eilu Ve'ilu Divrei Kim Chayim has it work. Rashi explains as follows. Yeah? Rashi explains as follows. It's like this. Beishan Beisil, let's use a simple example. Beishan Beisil. So how do the two of them work together? Says Rashi, Beishamai, when he paskin the way he paskin, had a certain logic, a certain rationale. This is the way it should be. That was his logical conclusion. Beishilo had a different rationale, different logic, and they came to different psakim. So Lagabe the psak, when it comes to the actual, what do we do practically? We follow Beishilo every time. But the rationale of Beishamai, the rationale is something different. There might be situations where the rationale of Beishamai is more applicable than the rationale of Beishilo. Means that we don't disregard the rationale of either of them. In certain circumstances, certain situations, the rationale, the logic, the svar Beishamai will apply. We'll take that over Beishilo. Is that clear? Yeah? Clear? Yitzi, clear? So this is... Moshe, this is your point. According to Rashi, can two things simultaneously be true, yes or no? According to Rashi, two things are never true at the same time. According to Rashi, two things can never be true at the same time. Here. No problem. Take pizza. According to Rashi, two things are never true at the same time. There's certain situations where we'll apply one logic, and other situations where we'll apply a different logic. But the two logics, right? The two svaras are never being applied at the same time. I feel like I'm losing people. Is that clear? Does that make sense?
But let's think about it mathematically. Yeah. It's like there are two methods to get the same result.
Correct, but they will never. We can't. But the point of Quantrash is that we can't apply them simultaneously.
Correct. You can get the same result.
100%. Well, it's not even the same result. You'll get a different result. One will be us or one will be mutter. But there's two methodologies to get there. Correct. But the big my point that I'm trying to bring out within Rashi. It's a major limitation on the idea of Eilu Ve'ilu. Because according to Rashi, what I said in the beginning was Sheker. There's no such thing as two things being true at the same time. Judaism doesn't believe in such an idea. One thing is right in this moment. You want to bring me another scenario? In that scenario, the opinion we disagree with might be right. But in this scenario, right in front of me, if this paper, what do I think about this paper? There's one right answer. There's not two right answers. If this paper was orange, so it could be different circumstances, there'd be a different right answer. But in my current situation, there's only one answer. That's Rashi. Is that clear? Yeah, you have something to say? No. Yeah, is that clear?
Yeah.
Everyone clear? Good. There's other opinions. I'll say them out quickly because I really want to get to the point. Maybe she's right. I have an agenda here. He caught me early. Mm-hmm. I'm coming with an agenda. I apologize. I should have been more upfront. I didn't realize we had such a discerning audience. Okay. I'll just summarize other opinions quickly. These aren't in chronological order. It's important when you're learning sugyas to know the chronology of who's speaking when, because you end up with a big mush of, if not, Rashi is a Rishon. Rashi is 1000s, right? 11th century to the early 12th century. He dies, I think, 1104. It's official death date. Rashi is as early as it comes. The Chida is 600 years later, right? The Chida is much later. Chida is an Achron. Chida, one of the most fasting figures in Jewish history. If anyone like history? Yeah? Okay. Two history people? Okay. I like history, so if it's interesting people, I'll say it. If not, I won't. Chida was one of the most fascinating figures in Jewish history. He was a Shadar. Anyone heard of a Shadar? What we got? What's a Shadar Malach? Shlicha der Rechamana. What was it? Collect money?
Yes, collect money.
Oh, so there you go. Malach's a whole historian here. The Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael had no money. How did the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael survive? On donations from Europe. The Imam Shah had throughout generations had no money. It became a problem. It's a whole different story. The whole yeshiva in Tzfas that ended up later was because there was no money in Yerushalayim. They had to go borrowing from the Turkish government. Eventually, got the boot. They got kicked out. So the Shluchei Derech Mana, right? The Sultan stopped giving the money. Correct. The Shluchei Derech Mana used to go from Eretz Yisrael to Europe and go mamish door to door, collect the money. Ruchida was one of the most famous. One of the most here. was one of the most famous Shluchi der Rachmana. Need a cup? Yeah. He was one of the most famous Shluchi der Rachmana. And the Chida, he wrote a Sefer, actually. Chida wrote, I think, 80 Sfarim or something. That's a ridiculous amount of Sfarim. One of the Sfarim that the Chida wrote was called Magal Tov. And we hear the Sefer, Magal Tov? Magal Tov was his travel diary. It's a fasting Sefer. You collect up this two new editions. Very interesting reads. He actually writes, he goes city to city, writes who he met, what he spoke to him about, and he's very blunt. He'll like say, I went to the city, I met the Rav here, he's a terrible person, he didn't give me any money. He kicked me out, and she writes in Fish. Kicked me out on the street, I had to go to the next city, Mamash, like, as if like we're talking casually. This is the Chida, thank you very much. So the Chida is a different shot. Says the Chida, I'm going to read this one inside, it's a little more strong. Eilu ve'eilu divin kem chaim, source 4, if anyone wants to follow along, if not, you can listen. Ein pirushu d'shneim emes, exactly what you started with. Ein pirushu d'shneim emes, there's no such thing as two things being true at the same time, it doesn't exist. What does it mean? What does the Chida say? Very fascinating. We're having machlokas, yeah? Say, me and Malach, we're having machlokas. I hold like this, he holds like this. So I say my opinion. Malach, you have a very nice sweatshirt. Beautiful sweatshirt. Malach says, what do you mean? I got it from my brother. It's terrible. I hate it, yeah? So he tells me, explain to me, why do you think this sweatshirt's nice? So I start describing it. I don't know. I like the black straps. Looks nice. Tells me, nah, it was really originally white. It got dyed in some fight I had, whatever, right? We start going back and forth. Because the Meilich is pushing me to explain why I like his sweatshirt, it forces me to sharpen my opinion, right? It becomes clearer. After, I like it specifically because of the contrast and the way it fits you and this and that, right? It becomes a whole different conversation. Says the Chida, what is Eilu v'Eilu divin kem chaim? What does it mean two things are right at the same time? No, no. Meilich is wrong, sorry. Meilich, completely wrong. It just means that from Meilich's wrong answer, it forces me to sharpen the right answer. So I'm right, Meilich's wrong, there's no two opinions here. I just had to refine, I had to sharpen what I was saying in light of Meilich's opinion. Again, according to this Chida, can two things be right at the same time? Absolutely not, right? No chance. Meilich is as wrong as he's ever going to be. It just happens to be, he does me a favor, he helps me come to the clarity. Very nice, Shkoich. Give him a bottle of water, he goes home, he's wrong, he gets a nice drink, that's it, end of it, right? Fascinating. That's a Chida. I'll quote you one other opinion just for Moshe Feinstein. Now we're going even later. We have here Einikol of a Talmud, Moshe Feinstein. So Moshe Feinstein was living, you know, 30 years ago, right? Contemporary. Moshe Feinstein says, what's it mean, Eilu ve'eilu divin kem chaim? Talmud Torah. We have a mitzvah d'oraisa, men, pashas also women, have a mitzvah to learn something, Talmud Torah, right? So let's say I decide, I like the Shammai very much. I decide I'm going to learn every single halacha Beishamai ever taught. And that's it. Only Beishamai. I'll find a nice book. I'll call it Hilchasot de Beishamai. Nice name. And I'll learn every Pesach Beishamai. Can I make a Birchasot Torah in the morning? Was I Yotzei Talmud Torah? What do you think? So says Moshe Feinstein, what does Eilu ve'eilu divin kem chaim mean? Means we don't pass like Beishamai. We never pass like Beishamai. Beishamai is Ozgevar. But what? If I'm learning Hilchasot Talmud Torah, if I want to say Birchasot Torah in the morning, and I only want to learn Shitas Beishamai, you're Yotzei Talmud Torah. It counts as Talmud Torah. Every opinion until now, this is really what I want to get to this year. Until now, you call it the foil. In English, it was the foil. That's the main point. Until now, like I said, there's no opinion that I've quoted so far who thinks that two things can be right at the same time. So if you have Beishamai and you have Beishillel, Hillel is wrong, Beishillel is right, Beishamai is wrong. 10 times out of 10. Showing there's a halach lemaisa, it might be helpful to clear. All these chishmos that we just quoted, lemaisa, are two things right at the same time? What's the answer? Maishi? Absolutely not. Torah does not believe in pluralism. That's the bottom line that we came to now. What I want to show you now is the Shita of the Ritva, world famous Shita. Mind-blowing when you understand it. And that's what we're going to develop to come to this new approach. Okay, this is really what I want to sink our teeth into. Let's look at the Ritva, source 7 inside. I want to read inside because it's that impactful. And again, when we're talking about our personal journeys, which will become relevant in a second, becomes less theoretical, this is where we're standing, right? We're standing in a place where we have two things. They both feel right. Could there be such a thing? Could there be such a thing that two things are right at the same time? Or not? You have to choose life. You have to choose. You have to make sacrifices. You have to choose. Which one is emes? So let's see. Source 7. Says the Ritva. This is the Ritva in Erev and Yogimo. Just some reference points. That's source 2. So the Ritva on that Gemara. Alatar, as I say. Eilu ve'eilu divin kem chaim. Need like some hachana for this ritva. It's like when you read it and you understand it, it's a life. You're saying for the tears that are about to come. no? Just stop. Okay. I thought you were.
No, I'm saying.
I thought you was about to get emotional with the ritva. Okay. So. Just me. That's fine. Just me. I'm going to get emotional. Fine. Says the ritva. Eilu ve'eilu divin kem chaim. Eilu ve'eilu divin kem chaim. Says the ritva. Shalu Rabbeinu HaTzarfat. French. The French rabbis had a different pshat in the Gemara. What did the French rabbis say? Heich efshar shiyu el veladikim chayim. Vezeh also vezeh matir. Ask the Ritva our question. One person tells you this piece of meat is treif. Another one tells you the piece of meat is kosher. How can both of them be right? Someone has to be wrong. How could they both be right? Says the Ritva. Vetir tzu. Ki kishar says the ritual like this. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim. He's Makabal Torah in Shemayim, yeah? So they taught him in Shemayim, let's say, a sukkah that's higher than 20 amos is possible. It's a bad sukkah. A sukkah that's too high is possible. So how did they teach, how did Kadosh Baruch Hu teach Moshe this halacha?
Sukkah that's too high is possible.
Sukkah that's above 20 amos, too tall is possible. About 60 feet. Your sukkah is 60 feet at home?
That's the start at a certain
point. All the extra
sukkahs, they have to be under a certain height.
Serious?
Roll the square and tell them, you know, check your, take out the measurement.
The
main catch, you have a sukkah. Next time you're there, take out the measuring stick in the middle and say, Rebbe, 20 amos, what are we going to do? It's a mission refresh. The first mission.
How high is it?
I never measured. I didn't have the Aziz.
It looks higher than 60 feet.
Okay, everyone now has homework next in the Shreve, whoever your Rebbe is, go with the tape measure and see what happens.
Okay.
Good. So what happened? One second. Let me finish the Ritva. I have the tissues here ready. I have to see the punchline. Says the Ritva.
We have more elegant ones.
More elegant?
Ones.
No, these are for Chen. You need like the push. Push it to Yid, you know, broken heart.
Sure.
Says the Ritva. Moshe Ben goes up to Shemaim, yeah? And he learns the halacha, the sukkah that's too high is possible. How did the Kadosh Baruch Hu teach him this halacha? Says the Ritva, Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't just say 20 amos is possible. Kadosh Baruch Hu said this. He told him, Memtes, 49 svaros to say why it's mutter, 49 svaros to say why it's aser, and then told him at the end of the day, this is what we hold. So that means like this. This is like an unbelievable idea. Well, what are we saying here? What does Eilvei Adivin Kimchai means? It means that the halacha as it's taught, a sukkah that's 20 amos is possible, is not black and white. Embedded in that halacha are 49 reasons why it's mutter and 49 reasons why it's aser.
It's not a historical fact.
This is an opinion, correct. Your point is excellent, and I could give you a whole other source sheet on Eilvei about historical facts. But if you want for yourself, source number 6 is the Tosafot Ben Peretz. He's dealing with that question exactly. I'm not going to get to that subtle nuance, but you're right. It is a nuance difference. I'll explain it again. When I say Eilvei Adivin Kimchai, so it's Machogs in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda and I forget who. Sukkah above 20 amos is possible, right? So, what are the two opinions saying? Are they just saying a baichsar, whatever they thought was right? No. It's like this. Moshe Rabbeinu was taught 49 reasons why they should be allowed and 49 reasons why it shouldn't be allowed. He saw both of them from Kadosh Baruch Hu. One opinion says it's mutter. It's tapping into those 49, one of those 49 reasons why it's allowed. The person who says it's usser is tapping into those 49 reasons why it's not allowed. Now, can I have the azas? Can I have the chutzpah to say, you who say it's allowed, you're wrong. Sheker. The Eibusher said it's wrong. The Eibusher himself said that logic, right? People chapin? You have to chap the amkus. Let me say it again.
How do they base it on the things that it's wrong?
Because the Kosh Baruch didn't say, here's a 459 reasons, they're all wrong, and here are 459 reasons, and they're right. He gave both of them. And he said, at the end of the day, we assume like this, though. So if I come and say the opinion that says it's mutter, if I'm saying one of these 49 svaras that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave Har Sinai, it's possible to say that that's sheker. It's possible to say it's not true. Chas Shalom. The Eibusher himself says such a svar. Right? You chapping? It's going to get deeper. It's going to get better. But just on the surface, the Ritva is the first opinion, the first person we've seen until now who thinks, what does Eilvei Adivin Kimchai mean? Shalom. What's the godless of the Ritva? Two things can be right at the same time. Simultaneous multiple truths. That means we have one opinion who says the sukkah is mutter. The other opinion says the sukkah is aser. And they're both equally right. Why? The Eibusher said both of those svaras. They're both equally divrei Elokim chaim, kipashtus. They're both the words of the Eibusher. The Eibusher gave both those pshatim. So all of you should be yelling at me, Yitzi. You're going to yell at me? If you're not going to yell at me, I want to hear it. Yeah, it's here, Yitzi. No, Yitzi. I need a... All of you should be yelling at me, Yitzi. What's the pasha?
So you can choose?
Good. A, you can choose. And B, one second. What are these 49 ways of being mutter, 49 is being usser, and what does it have to do with me? Like, it's very esoteric, right? Very like Himmeldick. What's going on? Tachlis. What are we talking about here? Yeah? Good. So let's explain this ritual a little more, because I see Shaul's looking at me, he's like, Rabbi, what are you talking about? Right? No clue what you're talking about. Shaul's glazed over, late at night, I had the pizza, that's it, tap out. It's a secret. I see in your eyes. I see in your eyes. I see in your non-eyes. I was close, right? What are we talking about? I want to give you, hopefully, what I think are deep understandings of this ritva, and then it'll come to practical. Because I think everyone's sick of hearing me speak theoretical. So you want to hear practical, how it impacted my life. So we'll get there.
Let's get to the point.
Let's get to the point. Maishi is keeping me online. I want to give you three explanations. I'm not sure if they're still different. I think they're all... Should we skip them or just get to the real Amkus? Okay, we'll skip the three. It's hard for me to do. If you look at source 8, you can read on your own, the Yamsha Shlomo gives one understanding. If you look at source 9, the Maharal, he gives another understanding. That'll be homework on your own. Read them if anyone's interested. I'm going to skip to source 10, which is Rav Kook, and source 12, which is the Baal Tanya. If I could quote Rav Kook and Baal Tanya in the same breath, Eleveil Divgim Chaim, that's what we're here for, right? And source 11 is of Yashar Ber Salveishik. So I have Rav Kook, the Baal Tanya, and Rav Yashar Ber in one breath. Eleveil Divgim Chaim. Beautiful. Ah, now Shel's half awake. Okay, what does Rav Kook say here? It's very beautiful. This letter from Rav Kook is not much we understand it. For me, it's life-changing. Speaking about this issue. What do we mean Akash Baruch Hu gave the Svar's why it's true, the Svar's why it's wrong? What are we talking about? It says Rav Kook like this. In the world of Sviros, we know what the Sviros are?
Yeah.
Three, right? We have, broadly, there's seven Sviros broken up into three parts. There's Chesed on the right, there's Gvura on the left, and there's Tiferes in the middle. Right, left, and center. Right, the right is always the Mashpia, the person who's giving, overflowing, chesed, abundance. The left is gvura, restriction, confinement, structure, order. Everyone uses a mashal. The right is like a pouring cup, water flowing, fountain of water. The left, the gvura, is like the cup that receives the water. What's teferis? What's the middle? Well,
I'm just like this. You know David Aaron?
Yeah. So what's teferis? What'd you say?
The combination,
the shiluv. The combination of the right of the chesed and the left of the gvura. So what does that mean? Ah, so says Rav Kook like this. Says Rav Kook, I have to be inside, I apologize. I was going to say outside, but I can't hold myself back. Says Rav Kook in source 10. I'll say outside. Want to read inside or outside? You tell me. What do people want? Have people ever learned Shtekel Rav Kook before? Show of hands.
Inside.
No one here has learned Shtekel Rav Kook? If we have to read inside.
Where I grew up, Rav Kook was
You're not Garisim. That's why we have to read inside. We have to read inside. We have to do tshuva a little bit.
We have to look at his face then, inside.
We have to do tshuva a little bit. Let's read Rav Kook inside. You know, we're developing it. Vitimhani. I'm going to start from the top of the second column. Everyone say Vitimhani?
Yeah.
Vitimhani. L'chizu anu tzrichim. The question was, how can you have two opposite things?
L'chizu anu tzrichim.
I was surprised. I was bewildered.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
L'chizu anu tzrichim. Do I have to explain this to you? Says Rav Kook. I have to explain to you how two things can be true at once? There's this higher logic, this Himmeldika logic that encompasses everything. In that higher world, in the world of the Eibishter, in this higher world, there's no such thing as opposites. There's no such thing as contradictions. What does that mean? Yesham bevade is its nine elam. Shekishet tefarish nimsa shnei hapshatim. What's Rav Kook saying? We use the example of a sukkah that's higher than Toyamos. We'll continue with that, Marshall. Rav Kook is saying, in Shemayim, there's this idea, this concept called sukkah. What's the sukkah in Shemayim look like? What's the sukkah in Shemayim look like? Says Rav Kook, the sukkah in Shemayim is this broad, elaborate, sophisticated, complicated, diverse idea. It has different angles, different dimensions, different logic, not physical dimensions, logical dimensions, different svaros, different elements, different emotional components, different logical components, different experiential components. It's this broad, big concept in Shemayim. That's what sukkah is. Now, I'm a simple person with my simple, small head. I want to understand, what is this sukkah that's in Shemayim? What is it? So I learned the halacha l'maisa, I learned a sugya. And it comes out that the sukkah of the Talim Kway Amos is mutter. Says Rav Kook, I'm right. In Shemayim, in this big, vast, complicated, complex, diverse idea that's called sukkah, there's a piece, a small little corner, all the way in this big, complicated picture, that says a sukkah that's higher than 20 Amos is possible. It exists. But you know what's on the opposite side of that same picture? a sukkah that's higher than 20 amos is kosher. And says Rav Kook, those in Shemayim, in this big picture of sukkah, they're not contradictions. Why? Because in Shemayim, the idea is comprised of chesed, of bounty, of overflow, of giving, of benevolence. And the idea is simultaneously comprised of gvura, constriction, restriction, right? Those two ideas aren't opposites in Shemayim. For us, they seem like opposites. Tiferes, as we said, is the shiluv, the combination of the two. Says Rav Kook, one bandomer says the sukkah that's too high is possible. One Andamer says it's kosher. What does it mean? Eilu ve'eilu divikim b'chaim. How can they both be true at the same time? What's the answer? Because in Shemayim, the idea of sukkah, the concept of sukkah, is so big and so vast and so broad and so complicated and so diverse and so sophisticated that they're both true at the same time. They have to both be true at the same time. Not only can it be true at the same time, it has to be true. It couldn't be any other way. If you would only know that a sukkah that's 20 amos is kosher, you're missing half of the picture. And if you only knew the other side, you're missing half the picture. So go shine. Halach l'maisa, we have to paskin on the way. We'll paskin. Good. The paskining is only a tip of the iceberg. In cheshbin, a piece seichel, in what's the MS, what's really happening here? There's this beautiful picture of sukkah that's so bigger than any of that. Does that make sense? People understanding? Shol, how do you feel about that?
Optical illusion.
Optical illusion.
I like that.
Anyone in philosophy? Anyone like philosophy?
I like that.
So Platonic ideal. You heard of the Platonic ideal?
I know so much.
Plato had the... Plato had the... Philosophy?
These are intellectual skills.
Philosophy?
I am not into philosophy.
So the Platonic ideal. Anyone know the cave marshal of Plato? Famous cave marshal. He didn't use the word marshal. I'm using that word marshal.
Philosophy,
yeah.
There's no physical value.
So Plato had the following theory. You have a person who's born in a cave, lives his whole life in a cave. After 90 years, he goes out and never sees anything. White, never sees anything. Goes out of the cave, he sees a bird. Tweet, 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 sees a bird. He instinctively knows what that bird is. It's not like, what is that? It resonates with him somehow. How is that possible? He never saw a bird in his life. Says Plato, there's something called a Platonic ideal. That means that in some higher realm, beyond this world, there's this concept that's called bird. We relate to the idea, the concept called bird, as a thing that has 2 feet and 2 wings and goes tweet, tweet and lives in trees, right? But the higher concept of a bird is well beyond that, way past that. And when we relate to, when we have the idea of what is a bird, we're really connecting to that concept that's not manifest in this world. It's higher.
Spiritual.
Exactly. It's subconscious. Yeah. When we see that bird, it clicks. Oh, that's that. That's what it is. I know what that is. But the Platonic ideal is, it's perfect. It's bigger than, it encompasses every definition of a bird. There's birds that have 2 legs, 1 leg, 5 feet, 8 arms, I don't know. Right? The Platonic ideal encompasses all of them. We intuitively connect to it. This is very similar to that. There's the idea of sukkah, that's so big, so vast, so complicated that it can encompass two opposites. For us, they seem like opposites. In this higher place, they're not opposites at all, right? They're part of this bigger picture that's called sukkah. It's called bird, right? Does that make sense? People feeling that, not feeling it?
Okay.
That's what the ritual means. That's what the ritual means. Two things. Kadosh Baruch Hu said 59 stars why it's okay, why it's not. But what does that mean? The complicated concept that we're talking about in Shemayim had 59 sides on each side of it, and both of them are true. It's watered down. What we receive is just a drop in the ocean of what's really the higher truth. I want to read you a shtickle Sefer Tanya. This is Abdama. He speaks about this inyan. I'll say it out. I don't want to be on trip. I'll say it out. Again, please read it inside. It's beautiful. I'll say it outside. Tanya says like this. Beis Shammai, they're always machmir, right? Beis Shammai in general is machmir. It's more strict. Beis Hillel is always make more lenient. What does that mean? Beis Shammai was like a very strict rabbi, like, you know, your menal and cheder, he gave you a petch, and he was always machmir, and Beis Shammai was like your mother who came home to crying afterwards. Like, we were talking about like big people here, right? He's always strict, and he's always, like, it's like nowadays, you want like the coolie, go that rabbi, you want like a, you know, stay away from him if you have a real shy. Like, that's Beis Shammai's hill. Says about Tanya, no. Every Jewish soul is intrinsically connected to Torah. Shishim Reboy, right? The 600 Jewish souls, 600,000 Jewish souls, each one of them connected one letter of the Torah. That means each soul has unique, specific connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu and to Torah. Says Rav Kook, like we said, there's chesed and there's gvura. Says the Baal Tanya, there's chesed and there's gvura. There's the right and the left. Some neshamas, naturally, are chesed neshamas. They're connected to flow. They're bountiful. They give. They're nurturing more and more and more. Those neshamas are more mekel. More tzad b'hakel. Some neshamas, strict, sturdy, confined, restricted, those neshamas are more machmir. Right? The way you paskin, says Rav Kook, or says Baal Tanya, is connecting to Yishosh and Yishama. Where? Who are you? What's inside of you? I don't think you believe me, so I'll read it inside, because it sounds like... Anyway, I just want to read to you one line of the Tanya, and then we'll finish up, we'll wrap up. I'm starting in the middle, Vihine, after the two dots, after the colon. If you have a machlokes in halach lemais, is it tama, is it tahor, is it treif or not? From opposite end, one says mutter, one says aser. How could they both be true? The elu el k'tivin yim chaim, loshin rabim. Both of them are right. How are both of them right? Al shem akor chaim nishmas yisrael. What does it mean? They're both right in what they're coming from inside. What motivated that psak? Yominu smol v'emtzot, right? There's a right, there's a left, and there's a middle. Shem chesed gvura. The right's chesed, the left is gvura. So the psak, the halacha, comes from the shorash neshama. One's a chesed dik neshama, one's a gvura dik neshama. They come out with different psak, right? But they're both divya kim chaim, both come from Eibshter, right? It's similar to what the Ritva were discussing. Okay, I want to speak about Soloveitchik for a second. Hi, Chalader, everyone can hear. I want to speak about Soloveitchik. I just think, in the spirit of Elif Elu, to speak about Rav Kook, Baal Tanya, Soloveitchik, all in one shir. That's, you know, it's good. So Rav Soloveitchik wrote three main books. Everyone know who Rav Soloveitchik was? Rav Yashar Soloveitchik. Rav Shiva of YU. I'm a Talmud of YU, so my official Rav Shiva. A grandson of Chaim Brisker, right? Brisker Einukel. He wrote three main books. His first book was called Holy Man of Faith. His next book was called Halachic Man. The last book was called Redem. Which one? Okay, good. This is Holy Man of Faith, Halachic Man. Yeah, very much so. And the last book was called Halachic Mind. Halachic Mind was his hardest book. Soloveitchik is a fascinating character. He's a grandson. We had a history buff. Malch is a history buff. We had a grandson of Chaim Soloveitchik who learned in University of Berlin in the 1930s. Got a PhD in philosophy from University of Berlin in the 1930s, right? Has a grandson of Chaim Soloveitchik end up in University of Berlin. So you can understand he was a...
Was he Yaki? OTD.
OTD.
Wasn't he a Yaki?
Not Yaki. Brisk. Brisk, not Yaki.
Soloveitchik was not a Yaki.
Litvish.
Litvish.
Uh-huh. Shmalti Litvish. So Soloveitchik's last book, Halachic Mind, was his hardest book. I have to confess, I didn't understand what I was saying. I quote here a summary of the book. I'm not going to be inside, but I'll tell you the summary of the summary. It's cliche, but hopefully it's still mavash a little bit. The Soloveitchik, as I said, he had a PhD in philosophy. Soloveitchik in Halachic Mind, basically the reason why it's so absurdly hard to read is because he gives an entire history of intellectual history from the time of Aristotle until current day. And the Soloveitchik's point, which is a fascinating point, is that all hashkafa and all Jewish theology and Jewish ideas, Jewish beliefs that were written throughout the generations, that's the Rambam, the Kuzari, the Sadigon, even later the Chosel Vavos, everything, was all based off of a counter pressure to secular philosophy and secular science. And Soloveitchik's point was that we're living in a time where there's revolution happening in the realm of intellectual philosophy and science. And that revolution should result in a revolution in our hashkafa. So let me tell you what I think he means. We had no philosophy. Anyone in here a science guy? Physics? Anyone like physics? Physics? So let's start with physics. Soloveitchik speaks about history. He speaks about philosophy and science. So I want to speak about those two realms. What are the contemporary themes, very quickly? What are contemporary themes in philosophy and science? And how does that relate to what we're talking about? I think it's we'll start with physics. Realm physics. Anyone know about quantum physics?
Yeah.
Heard the term? What's quantum physics talking about?
It's hard to explain quantum physics about all these smaller than atoms, right?
Quantum, exactly, subatomic.
It doesn't like the topic.
Small things, you know, make loud noises. So, right, subatomic, that means there's an atom. Quantum physics is anything that's smaller than an atom. An atom is comprised of three parts. Just adrav, you know, agav, what we were just talking about, there's chesed, gvura, tiferes. Atoms comprised of protons, which are positively charged particles, neutrons, which are negatively charged molecules, and electrons, which are negatively charged, and neutrons, which are in the middle. So chesed, gvura, tiferes, that the subatomic, the smallest level of this world, really works in threes. Just agav. But it's a very fascinating thing. One of the fundamentals of quantum physics is called the wave-particle duality. Has anyone heard of that? Wave-particle duality? So it goes like this. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know anything about quantum physics. Mamish is my small understanding. Wave-particle duality goes like this. Things could act like a wave or things could act like a particle. That means like this. What's a particle? Particle is, if I have this cup and I throw it, it travels in a straight line. That means it starts at one point and it ends at one point. Hit one point on that box, right? It didn't hit anyone on the side. Why? Because you were not in the range, that direct line of that cup. That's a particle. It goes from A to B in a straight line. A wave, a sound wave, for example, so the type of wave, means that the words are starting from my mouth from one point. But how is it possible that all of you can hear it? Because it doesn't go in a straight line. If sound was a particle, only Yitzi would be able to hear me. That's where my mouth is directed. But the fact that you can all hear me means that it works in a wave. That means it won't end up on one point on the wall. It's bouncing off every point of the wall. Particles and waves. Is that clear?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Clear? So what's even more fascinating is, on the higher than atomic level, things are either usually particles or waves. Sound is a wave. Light is a wave. Everything else, other things are, not everything else, other things are particles. When you come to the subatomic level, there's something called the wave-particle duality. That means you'll take an electron, you'll start at one point, you'll shoot it out of a beam. It'll start at one point, and it'll start to act like a wave. It'll start to travel to different points, but somehow it'll end at one point on the wall. It does both. It acts like a wave and acts like a particle. Wave-particle duality. It's both of them at the same time. That means it starts from one point, it ends at one point, but in the middle, it's acting like a wave. How's that possible? The whole, my understanding, the field of quantum physics is realizing that when we get onto a quantum level, smaller level, things don't act the way they were act on a bigger level. In our realm, you can't have things that are both waves and particles. It's either or. When you get to a smaller level, it's both. It's a wave and it's a particle. It's exactly what we're talking about here. Eilu ve'eilu divrei Kim Chaim. They're both true. There's waves, there's particles. It's true on the physical level. This is a realization of the last 100 years. We didn't know this before. Until now, science worked in a binary way. Here's our IT guy, Shaul. What's binary code? Binary code.
Zeros and ones.
Zeros and ones. As a coder, is there ever such thing as a three, Marshall? Doesn't exist. What's quantum computing? Oh, so let me, thank you. Shaul's our computer guy. Make sure what I'm saying is not Sheker, okay? Yeah? Just make sure I'm, hold me accountable. There's a new field that's called quantum computing. It goes like this. Regular computers work in binary code, ones and zeros. That means anything this computer is doing right now, it's either a one or a zero in a different sequence that's making this computer work, correct? Every program you open is 1-0-0-0-0-1 or 1-1-1-1-0-0-0. Some variants of the two or infinite variations that will lead to any program. It's ones or zeros. Binary code. Am I good so far, Shaul? Good. Quantum computing, which is the up-and-coming thing, new age technology, is using quantum mechanics. Quantum physics don't work in binary terms. Like we said, they're particles, they're waves, they're both at the same time. Quantum computing is not bound by ones or zeros. It could be one and zero at the same time. All right, I'll give you a simple example. If you have a computer, you have it flip a coin, play a game with a computer, flip a coin, heads or tails. So if you play the game with the computer, if you run a program, how often will the computer be right? 50% of the time. The computer's code is either to guess heads or tails. It'll be right half the time if you did enough, right? Does that make sense? With a quantum computer, it'll be right every single time because it's not heads or tails. The other one is postmodern philosophy. Anyone know postmodern philosophy?
Didn't think of it yet.
Postmodern philosophy is a current trend in philosophical terms. Basically, is that there's no objective truth. No such thing. Multiple things can be true at once. That's look it up online, Wikipedia, postmodern philosophy, you'll see. What the Rebbe was claiming is that in the past century, these two trends, quantum mechanics and postmodern philosophy, are speaking to what it means to be a Jew. It's not binary. It's not one or the other. It's not yes or no. It could be both. Now let's speak personal. This is what everyone wants to hear. I apologize it took so long to get here, but on a personal level. So let's pick up my story where we left off. I'm 18 years old, up to the point where I'm, I don't know, 23. I'm stuck in between two things. I have my family on one side, and I felt very connected to, and the tradition and the Messiah and all that. And I had my education on the other side that spoke to me. It's who I was. It's what made sense to me. I was stuck. I didn't know how to choose. And I would say until I was about 23, my thought process was always, it's one or the other, binary. I have to choose. And I'll be honest, being open with you, the choice that I was going to make from the time I was 18 to 23 was my family. It spoke to me more. I connected to it. I wanted to be with my family. I wanted to be connected to my Zaydas and to the Minhagim and the Messiah. I wanted to be part of that link. That's who I was. And that's where I was. I felt like I had to choose. If I was choosing, I was going that direction. Well, the realization through this Torah, through these ideas that I came to, was that it's really, for me, again, I'm only speaking on a personal level, it's not binary, and it wasn't binary. And let me give you a simple example, very practical example of what that meant for me personally. I'll use an example that hopefully might resonate with some of you. For me, it was Emuna. Emuna was a big topic of mine that I struggled with for many years. In what sense? On the one hand, we spoke about Soloveitchik. On the one hand, I was... On the one hand, I was learning in my yeshiva, one of the schools I went to. Is there another box?
No,
oh, okay. On the one hand, I was learning in the yeshivas that I went to. Oh, one hand, I was learning in the yeshivas where I went to. Think. Ask questions. Investigate. Don't let things be given. Delve into them. Ask questions. Understand things. Where, why? Where does it come from? If you get the answer, great. A lot of times you won't get the answer, but ask. That was Baruch Hashem. I was zochah to be in such a school. That was... put into me.
This was the Mount Orthodox
side. There's the Mount Orthodox side. And to be honest with you, part of it worked for me. I had intellectual freedom, I could think. Part of it didn't work for me. I didn't have the kelim at my age to come to the answers, to come to healthy conclusions. So being inundated with questions, and I didn't feel like I had the ability to come to answers. So I was torn. On the other hand, I'd go to my uncle, Shmuel Leifer, in Bar Park. What was I hearing? I'm sure all of you heard growing up. Simple. Don't ask questions. The Abishur exists. The Abishur is good. Believe in him. I was Zoch. I was lucky enough. My uncle wasn't doing... I never heard the words from my uncle in my life. You can't ask a question. My uncle never said that. I'm sure my mother, for example, says the reason why she struggled with the Chassidish world is because she always thought you can't ask questions. That was very difficult for her. I was Baruch Shem. My uncle never said those words to me, and I...
He didn't go to his yeshiva.
What?
He didn't go to his yeshiva.
No, in his Talmudim will tell you the same thing. I think. I never heard my uncle say the words, you can't ask questions. But my uncle's mentality was very much a man pshita. Simple faith, you believe, you glide, my Zaydah believed, I believed, my Elta Zaydah believed. There's a Yibishter, very simple, well, what's complicated here? It was binary to me, it was one or the other, I have to choose. What was the Tiferes? What was the middle path that I came to? What was the quantum realization that I had? What was the Il Veil Divkim Chaim? Again, the way I want to explain Il Veil Divkim Chaim is that there's a middle path, it's Emes, there's a Tiferes that can combine these two extremes. We can find a truth, and this is my truth, that encompasses both extremes, the right and the left, and there's something in the middle. Yeah.
How do you believing in Hashem and not that exists to Hashem at the same time?
We mean not him not existing?
You say that you want to conflict that between. You
know, so I was never conflicted that he didn't believe. Okay. It just had to ask questions to understand how he believed. So okay. I was conflicted with asking questions or meaning pshita. I just want to be clear. It's an important point Malach just made. I have to be intellectually honest. Within Il Veil Divkim Chaim, there's a limit. There's no such thing as Il Veil Divkim Chaim on the Yud Gimel Ikrim. You can't say, I don't think God believes, Il Veil Divkim, God exists, Il Veil Divkim Chaim. There's a limit. We believe in diversity, but there is a limit. That's important. It doesn't mean, I have to clarify. It doesn't mean you can't ask the question. It just means if someone comes to tell you, Judaism believes that God doesn't exist. That's not called Il Veil Divkim Chaim. You can speak about it, you can ask the question, you can talk about it, but it doesn't mean that position can exist within our Jewish belief. That's important clarification. Yeah?
Based on your perspective,
yeah.
Will you allow your children to learn the arguments?
Good. Good. So let me
say, no, this is the grain of the
so, that so let me explain to you where I landed. That's your question. Where did I land up? So again, what I'm trying to explain to you is that the non-binary option is what we call Tiferes, the combination of both. So what was my MS? What was my Tiferes that I found in this question? And for me, again, I don't think this is going to be the answer for everyone. I'm just giving my own personal reflection here. The answer, the place that I get comfortable with was with a religion, with an emuna, a belief that wasn't based off of questions and it wasn't based off of simple faith. It's what I call experiential belief. What does experiential belief mean? means as follows. My I had a Rebbe once who had a college class with the following project. The project was, you're giving all the elements that are in the sky, and the project was to go home and to calculate what color is the sky. So he goes home, he does this project, he's a chemistry major, does this project, sits there for hours, computing all the different elements and all these equations, chemistry equations. He comes out, the sky is green. Oh, hey, what am I going to do? The sky's green. He goes home, he does the equation a second time. Oh, carries it, comes out, sky's green. So what happens the next morning when he walks out of his house and he sees a bright, blue, clear sky? What does he do with that information? For me, that's where I came to my emunah. It was like this. I compare my emunah to dots on a page. It's like a connected dot page. Is there any reason that I should connect dot A to dot B? Absolutely not. It's my choice. If I continue to connect those dots, eventually a picture will develop. Now you're going to come to me and you're going to say, well, who said you should connect that dot? Maybe you can connect that dot. Maybe you can connect. You're 100% right. I have no empirical proof. I have no way of saying for sure that you could connect those dots. But when I make the choice to connect the dots, a picture forms. And that picture was the Eibishter is in my life. Simple. It wasn't faith. It wasn't blind faith. It was experience. It was my experience. I was living with Eibishter in my life. That's who he was. It was every experience that's happened in my life was another dot in the picture that made the picture more profound. It was my experience. It was my life. It wasn't I was believing in Eibishter. I was living. I was living with Eibishter. He was there. So now, what happens? So now I want to start asking questions. This is my point. I want to start asking questions. Does God exist or does he not exist? It's the exact same thing as that paper saying the sky is green and you go outside and you see a bright blue sky. Does that paper cause you any questions, confusion? No, I know the sky is blue. I can ask all the questions in the world. I can investigate. I can look. I can search. I could delve deep. I can really figure it out because my experience, if you're being intellectually honest, hopefully, these things can't, yeah, no problem. These things, thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. These things only can have a limited impact on what you experience, what you feel, what you touch. Now again, can anyone tell me that what I'm touching is real? No. All of you can say, no problem. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. Well, yeah, exactly. All of you are going to tell me, you're making up that conclusion. You're deciding to connect the dots. You're 100% right. You cannot prove to anyone that these dots need to be connected. If you connect the dots and you choose to make a connection, you live, it becomes tangible, it becomes your experience, and then ask all the kashas in the world that you want. That's what I found. The more I investigate, the more it's mechazik my emunah. Because I knew what was real. I knew it was true, because I lived it, and everything else was just intellectually boosting it. Is that... What?
I think I get it.
Yeah. That's my spiel, that's my story. That's how I ended up living in Borough Park, being in NYU, all in one page of paper. And how long? Too long. That's the answer. Too long.